Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, two lines down. The Gemara has continued to discuss the case that it left off with yesterday, which was an instance where Rabba said, Zarak Tinok Mirosh Agag, the baby was thrown off the roof, Uba Acher Vikiblo B'Saif, and someone else caught the baby on the sword and resulted in the baby's death. Who is responsible in that case? The Gemara said yesterday that's a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitevra and the Rabbanon, according to the Rabbanan, who say that you have to kill the entirety of the individual. Over here, we don't have that by either party, because the party threw him off, in the end, did not kill the baby, but deemed him to be gone or a trefa. And the one who put the sword in did the actual killing, but he killed someone who was already deemed to be dead. And therefore, neither of them are considered to be chayavin. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitevra says that whoever gives the final blow, because it means nefesh kol dihi, any amount of death that is caused, I mean, if you're the final trigger for the death, then you are responsible. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitevra would say that the person who caught him on the sword is chayav. But here the case is altered slightly and says, bashor v'kiblo b'karnav. Instead of the case where someone was there standing with a sword and caught the baby, a shor came and caught the baby on its horns. That, the Gemara says, is plugdo de Rabbi Shmuel beno shor v'yochanan ben broka v'rabbanan. Netanyo, because we have a braita that tells us about the pasuk with regards to paying of kofir. Im kofir yushat alav, v'natan pidyon nafsho, k'chol esher yushat alav. That the one, if it's a shor mu'ad who does the goring and kills an individual, then the person has to pay kofir. Over there, it says in the pasuk, v'natan pidyon nafsho, that he has to give a redemption of his nefesh. That is a dangling modifier. It's not clear whose nefesh. It says nefesh shelo. There are two subjects in the first part of the psukim that describe this incident. One is the mazik, the individual owns the shor, and the other one is the victim of the shor's goring. So when we say v'natan pidyon nafsho, it's not clear if you are paying the redemption of the soul of the one who was the victim who died here, or are you paying the pidyon nefesh of the one who was the owner of the shor, the one who was the cause of the problem. And therefore we have a machloket over here, which is Demei Nizak, the Tanakama, the Chachamim say that it's Demei Nizak, you pay the value of the victim, that is the pidyon, that is the kofar that is being paid. Here, you're not going to be subject to a death penalty for killing this individual, but you will be subject to a monetary penalty of kofar in order to gain kapara for the death of this individual, the reason being that it was your mamon that did the killing here, and not you yourself. Now then, Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokha, Demei Mazik. It's the value of the individual who did the damage over here, I mean the owner of the shor who killed the victim, he has to redeem himself. I mean, he is deserving of the death penalty, and therefore he must redeem himself. Both opinions are reasonable. You have Rabbi Yishmael ben Obish and Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokha says that instead of the death penalty, this person's paying kofar, and therefore he needs to redeem himself in order to attain kapara. On the other hand, the Tanakama, the Chachamim, believe that it's Demei Nizak. It is the value of the victim because that was the person that was killed over here. And in essence, it's an enhanced form of nezek, which is complete nezek. And therefore, if you want to attain kapara, you have to redeem or in essence make restitution for the individual that's killed. So those are the two opinions over here. And that machloket will determine what the halacha is over here. What that means is a machloket Rashi, the Rabbeinu Chananel. Rashi over here says that according to the Rabbonon, Dishaiminan bin Izak, according to the Rabbanon that we determined it by the victim, Hailo Abile Damim Upatur. This baby that was already descending off the roof has no value because in this short moment it'll hit the ground and it'll die. If that's the case, when the shore came and intercepted it, he intercepted a dead baby already. So at that point, there's no value to this baby. If that's the case, there's no Damei Nizak. There is no value to pay kofar for the monetary compensation of the victim. The victim was worthless at the time that the shor did the damage. On the other hand, in the case, if you're paying Demei Mazik, if you're paying for the redemption of the individual who owns the shor, over here, the individual who owns the shor is still alive, and Demei Mazik has full value. And therefore, for that reason, you would have to pay, in that instance, the Bala shor would have to pay kofar in that instance. That's the way that Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel over here says just the opposite. And he says, "Birabanan, according to Rabbanan that say, Demei Nizak, v'chayav balashor b'kofer, sharei shoro harag. That the person who pays the Demei Nizak is chayav because his shor did the killing, and therefore he is responsible for the payment. The Rabbi Shmuel damar Demei Mazik, according to Rabbi Shmuel says it's the money of the Mazik, the one who did the damage, Perish Hamazik Hu Achayav Mita. The Mazik here was really deserving of the death penalty. Mipnei Shelo Shamar Shoro, because he did not watch or guard his shore properly. Kilu Hu Harag. Therefore, it's as if he killed this individual. Rachmana Chasale L'Shalem Kofer. And the Torah had Rachmanot on him to say that he could pay Kofer instead of being subject to a death penalty. Fish Lo Asam Maaseb Yadayim, because he didn't do anything actively with his Yadayim. This individual, had he been the one who killed the baby, for instance, the case before, where he's standing there with the sword, the Rabbanan, who argued on Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateya, already said that you'd be patur if you did it yourself. So if you did it yourself, you'd be patur. Certainly, if your animal does this, then you should be patur. And then certainly on its shore, that he should be patur. So Rabbeinu Chananel says that when it comes to Dmei Mazik, you would not have personal responsibility here if you did it yourself. Therefore, if your shore does it, then certainly we can't ascribe liability or culpability to you, because if you did it yourself, you wouldn't be chayav. And if your shore did it, which is obviously a lesser form of this matter, then certainly you would not be obligated in that case. On the other hand, for Dmei Nizak, if the case is to apply kapara for the death of a victim, here somebody died, and it was caused by your shore, and therefore you are responsible to make payment for it. So it's exact opposite of what Rashi says over here, the explanation of whether you pay or you don't pay, depending if you hold the Dmei Mazik and Dmei Nizak. For that reason, if you look in the Rashash over here, the Rashash points out that the logic or what the Rabbeinu Chananel is pointing out makes it that this question is almost an imtim salomar, which is that according to the Chachamim, in the previous scenario where the individual caught the baby on the sword, who say that the individual is patur, then there's no question here that also you're going to be patur here. It doesn't matter if you hold Dmei Nizak or Dmei Mazik. If you're not chayav, as the Rabbeinu Chananel says, for doing it yourself, certainly you cannot be obligated when your shor does it. Therefore, the Rashash says, in the Shita of Rashi, he says that it's an imtim salomar. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira, that in the case of an individual doing it personally and catching the baby on the sword, that you would be chayav, in that instance, what would be the din for kofar when the shor goes in? And that would be subject to the machlok between Rabbi Shnol ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and the Rabbonon. And their machloket is within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira, where there is personal liability if the person did it himself. Then we have a question with regards to whether the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, or the Rabbonon, and that would be determinant as to what the halacha is over here. But it's clear, based on what the Rashash says, that this question doesn't exist within the Rabbonon, and that's why the Rabbeinu Chananel went the direction that he did in explaining the Gemara this way. Whereas the Rashash takes that logic of the Rabbeinu Chananel and just simply says, you're right. If it's in the sheet of Rabbanon, there's nothing to discuss. Therefore, we must be discussing the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira. But then Rabbi Yehuda ben Bateira, then there's a machloket of Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and Rabbanon as to whether Dmei Mazik or Dmei Nizak. And in that case, it will depend on what Rashi says, which is, are you chayav because the Mazik caused damage over here and is still alive? I mean, he killed someone and he's still alive. Or are we focused on the Dmei Nizak, and the Dmei Nizak is worthless at the time that he killed him, and therefore you would not be chayav. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabba, nafal mirosh agag, an individual fell off the roof, vinitka bi'isha, and it happened to be that he landed on a woman and had bi'ah with that woman. Chayav bidalid dvarim. In that case, he's not only chayav for the nezek that's done, he is chayav for the dalid dvarim over here. The dalid dvarim include everything besides boshet, according to Rashi, which is that you didn't have kavanah to do damage over here. So therefore, boshet is only in the case where you have kavanah or intent. So all the other items you would be chayav for over here, which would be nezek, tsar, ripui, and shevet. Those items you would be chayav for. And as Rashi notes over here, it's a case where, and we know this from the seifa of the statement, that it was a ruach mitzuyah. It was a normal wind that came and blew him off the roof. And if Rashi says it's that he's a shogeg karov the mezid. It's a person, yeah, he might unintentional, but he's karov the mezid because he didn't take proper precautions in a normal wind. And therefore, he's responsible for all of the normal compensation that an Adam makes, and an Adam is mu'ad bi'olam, with the exception of boshet, because there was no kavanah over here to do hezek. Ubivimto lo kana. If it comes to his yivama, even though we have a principle when it comes to the kinyan of a yivama, that the person who has bi'ah with his yivama, whether ba'ones, beratzon, v'shogeg, b'mezid, he's koneh the yivama, that's only true when he had intent for bi'ah. If he didn't have intent for bi'ah, then in that instance, you can't claim that it was an unintentional or an ones case of bi'ah, because there was no intent for bi'ah whatsoever. That's what Rashi says over here. Avazel lo nitkavim l'shum bi'ah. Hilkach lo kana. So even though the threshold for acquiring a yivama is very low, and any type of bi'ah would work, the hewer would fail because of the fact that there was no intent for bi'ah. As the Gemara says over here, chayav b'nezek b'tzar b'ripoy b'shevet. He's chayav in those four items. Aval boshet lo, by regards to embarrassment, there's no obligation over here. It's none, because you have a Mishnah, ain't chayav ala boshet ajay mitkavein. There's no obligation with regards to paying for embarrassment until the person has intent. What type of intent does he need? Whether he needs intent to do damage, or simply intent for landing on this individual, we'll see in a second in the latter half of the statement over here. But without that intent, it's clear that you do not pay boshet. V'amar Abba, nafam rosh agag beruach she'ena mitzuya. So that already identifies that the previous case was a case of a ruach mitzuya. Over here, he fell off the roof in an unanticipated wind, something that he could not have foreseen. Bezik, and he does damage, ubiyesh, and he caused embarrassment. Chayav al hanezek, he's responsible for nezek, upatur bidalad varim. And then he's patur from any of the other payments that are due here, because over here, not only is he lacking in kavanah, he's also taken the proper precautions over here to protect himself. Here was an unusual circumstance. So because of Adam Mu'ad Li'olam, he still will be chayav for the nezek that he does, but the other four dvarim have a slightly higher threshold over here, and therefore he will not be responsible for the dalid dvarim. Beruach mitzuya, on the other hand, if it happened in a normal wind, dezik, and he did damage, ubiyesh, and he embarrassed the individual, chayav bidvalid dvarim, upatoh alaboshet. This is similar to what we just said before in Rabba's statement, that over there you'll be chayav for all the other four things because you did not take the proper precautions in Adam Mu'ad Li'olam. On the other hand, you'll be patur on the boshet, on the embarrassment, because it wasn't any kavanah over here. Ve'im nithapech, if he did a flip of sorts, we'll call it, chayav af ala boshet. Then he's responsible for the boshet. Here, we spoke about before the need for kavanah or intent in order to be chayav ala boshet. So when he's nithapech, Rashi says over here, l'achar she'tchil dinpol, after he began to fall off, then it kaveinli pola ladam lahanato. He intended to land on this individual for his own benefit, and therefore that's enough intent to make you chayav for the boshet. Even though you had no intent to damage or be mazik this individual, it's clear that you intended to land on them. And your intent to land on them is sufficient grounds to obligate you, in this case, for the boshet. On the other hand, there are those that suggest that you need kavanah lahazik. It has to be intent to do damage, and not simply enough that you have intent to land on this individual in order to be chayav in the boshet. And that's what the Gemara means over here by nitapech. The individual flipped over in order to land intentionally on this individual, not only to cushion their fall, but also to do damage to the individual that was down below. Tetanya, mimashma shenemar, because it says in the pasuk, this is found in Dvarim in Perikav Hey, it's an incident where there's an altercation between two men, ki natsu anishim yachtav, ish v'achiv. One of the wives of one of these individuals steps into the fray in order to save her husband. In order to save her husband, she goes and grabs onto the private parts of the other individual. The Torah says, you have to cut her hand off. Do not have any mercy. Over there, the Gemara learns that is not literally, but she has to make monetary compensation or restitution. And this is what the Gemara is discussing over here. Mashmash ne'emar v'shulcha yada. We know that she stuck out her hand. V'shulcha yada. We know that she stuck out her hand to protect her husband. Eni odea shechzika. Don't I know that she used her hand to grab onto something, to do something? So why does the pasuk tell us v'shulcha yada v'chzika v'mivushav? Of course, that's what she was doing to protect her husband. Matal malomar v'chzika. So then, what is the Torah telling us when it says it grabbed onto his private parts? There, since she intended to do damage or cause pain to this individual, she had no intent to embarrass the other individual. She was just stepping in to save her husband. And in stepping in to save her husband, she happened to embarrass him by the way that she saved her husband. Then she still considered chayavet for the embarrassment that's caused, even though the intent was only for damage and not for busha. And since the shlichut yad, the sticking of her hand out in order to do the nezek, in order to do the damage, is what obligates her over here, we say that that is enough, or that is only speaking about damage, and that's enough that v'chzika b'mivushav is the embarrassment or the embarrassing part over there. And we say just because she did it to be mazik, even though her intent was simply to cause damage to the other party, Nevertheless, you'll be held accountable for the busha that's created of echzika b'mibusha. And that's the limud of the Gemara over here that teaches us that when there's intent, then there is a chiyuv of busha. Again, we spoke before about whether it has to be intent for damage or simply intent to get hana'a or land on the individual to benefit oneself. Amar Rabba, hiniach lo gechelet al libo umeit patur. Individual puts a coal on his friend's body, and then the individual dies. The person is patur. Obviously, it's patur midine adam v'chaya v'dine shamayim. But the reason being, as Rashi notes over here, shayelo l'selka, the individual who is a free-thinking, normal individual, should have removed the coal from himself so that he did not end up dying. If he doesn't remove the coal, then it becomes his fault and not the fault of the person who placed the coal on top of him. Al Bigdo, on the other hand, if he places it on his clothing, v'nisraf, and then the clothing was consumed by the coal, chayav. There he is obligated. Even though the person or the owner had the ability to remove the coal, the owner doesn't have to say there, oh, I will remove the coal to prevent the damage that's happening. He'll say, no, I'll let it burn, and then I'll go to court and I'll collect from you for the damage that is done. There's no obligation upon the individual to save his clothing from the coal that you placed there, and therefore you will be obligated for the damage that's caused, even though he had the ability to remove it in the interim. On the other hand, by the case of the coal on the body, you do have an obligation to save yourself, and therefore if you didn't save yourself and you didn't remove the coal from the body, then you'll be held culpable for your taking of your own life, and the other individual who did it, again, will be patur mi dinei adam, but chayav mi dinei shemayim. Amar Rava tarvayu taninu. We have both of these are found in Mishnayot. Halibo, the fact that you place it on his heart, that you're not responsible in that case, that's not. Kavash alav l'toch ha'or o l'toch ha'mayim. If an individual came and trapped someone, either in a fire or in a water body, whereby they cannot escape, so they're locking them in or trapping them in that situation, is the cause of their death. And therefore he's unable to escape from the death of the fire or the water. Umeit, and he dies, chayav, then you're responsible because you were the proximate cause to the death of this individual by preventing them from the ability to escape. Dachafo l'tocha ur, or l'tocha mayim, if someone pushes them into a fire or into water, yachol alot misham, and they have the ability to escape or to emerge from there, umeit, and then they died, patur, then you are patur. This is exactly what we said before, which is, if the person has the capability to escape and does not escape or does not remove themselves from that situation, then the person who put them in that circumstance will not be held liable for the death penalty. Again, midine adam, midine shamayim, it would be a different story, but at least be baked in. We can't give him the death penalty. We can't bring him to court over murder charges because the individual had an ability to escape from the certainty of death. Big do ditnan. By a beged, we have the Mishnah that says, kra et ksuti. The person says to another party, rip my clothing. Shaber et kadi. Break my barrel, my pitcher. Chayav. Then the individual who goes and acts at the behest of the owner will be responsible for compensation or the damage that's done. Even though they were instructed by the owner simply said, you can do it, but you'll have to pay me. He never gave them an exemption or a monetary waiver that if he does it, that he will be patur. Amat liftor, on the other hand, if he says you can do it on the condition that you are patur, then patur. Then you are patur, because there he specifically forgives the monetary obligation for the damage that is caused. But in a case where he does not waive it, even though he's the one who instructed you to do it, you see that you are chayav. And similarly, in the case where he has the option to take off the coal and doesn't choose to take it off, you will still be responsible for the bigadim or the damage or the value that you destroyed there, because he has no obligation to remove the coal, and he also hasn't waived the monetary obligation that derives from that damage that you did. The Balei Tosafot note over here that both sides of this are not such big chidushim. It seems obvious that the person would have to remove the coal from themselves. It also seems obvious that if he doesn't remove it from the beged, that it's not the owner's responsibility and they should be compensated for it. The Tosafot says the chidush here is lo itzriach latuya raya elish lo tomar kemish meniach al bigdo v'hu shall take. The fact that the other party put the coal on this individual's clothing and he doesn't make a peep, he doesn't give any response whatsoever, imken dato avayishi pater. We don't assume that there's automatic forgiveness or a waiving of your monetary claims, even though you're present when the other individual puts the coal on your clothing or on your property and causes the damage. The fact that you do not object to his behavior or his action is not an automatic waiver or relinquish your rights to make a claim here and to collect. And that's what the Balei Tosafot say, that Rava is bringing the proof from the Mishnayot to show us that that's the case. Until you have explicit waiving of one's claims, when they say you're going to be patur, you are chayav. And that's the chiddush of the cases over here. Bayirabo, heniach kachelet alev avdo. The person places a coal on the heart of his eved knani. Mahu, what is the din? Kigufo dami. He has a din like a human being, like any other person, and therefore the individual, the eved, should have removed the coal from his body. If he didn't remove the coal from his body, the master that placed the coal there will not be responsible for the death or the damage that's done to the eved. Oh, kimamono dummy. Or did we say that, we've seen this before, that eved knani in many ways is treated like property, and therefore he would be deemed like mamon. And if that's the case, if you put the coal on the eved, you would be chayav. Even though the eved didn't remove the coal, you'd still be responsible because there's a monetary obligation over here. And that is the way that Rashi views the question over here. Imeniach adam gachelet alev avdo. If the owner placed the coal on the heart of his eved, patur. Shailo le'eved l'salka. Because the eved should have removed it. Or in the case if it's mimono, then it would be treated like big dough, and therefore there would be a monetary obligation. He would not be exempt. Imtim salomar kugufo dami. If you say that he has the din of a goof, shoro mahu. What is the din of an animal? Hadar Pashto, he answered that question, Abdo Kigufo, the Eved has a din like a human being, like a goof, Mishoro Kimimono, and we don't expect, as Rashi says, Shein Bodat L'Salka, we don't expect an animal to have the good sense or the ability to remove the coal from them, and therefore it becomes like Beged, and you'll be Chayab for the damage that is done or caused in that instance, whereas by the Eved Knani, he's like any other human being, and therefore he should have removed the coal. If he doesn't remove the coal, then you're not going to be responsible for the action that was taken by the Adon. That is the way that Rashi learns this Gemara, and the Rambam similarly learns it in the same way that Rashi learns it over here. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot, the Ra'ivud, and many of the other Rishonim think that the question is somewhat different, and you can see that in the Balei HaTosafot over here, says in a case, Keshe Eved Kafut, the case here is where the Eved is tied up, and therefore he no longer has the ability to act or to do anything for himself. Rabo made its low, and the master is standing right next to his Eved, and then a third party places the coal on this individual's eved. What is the responsibility of the master towards the eved kanani? Is his responsibility towards eved kanani kigufo, like his own body, and therefore he has to protect him and take the coal off his eved just like the eved would do for himself? Or is it mimono? Or does the baal or the adon here look at the eved kanani as being property? And if he's property, he can say, look, he'll die or the coal will stay there, and then I will get compensated for that property. Which way do we treat it? We treat it kigufo, okay, mimono. And that is the safek over here, according to the Balei HaTosafot. Shema lo yachush harav l'salko, mipnei shishalem lo d'mei nisko. He doesn't lose anything by leaving the coal there, because whoever put the coal there is going to have to compensate him for the death or the loss or monetary loss that he incurred from the death of the Eved Kanani. And that is the nature of the Gemara's question over here. It's not about an Eved Kanani has a full din of a human being with regards to killing them. The person would be subject to the death penalty, like we see in Parshat Mishpatim, that if an Adon murders his Eved Kanani, that he would be put to death for that. And so there'd be no different if the Adon is placing the coal on the Eved Kanani. He would be Chayav if the Eved Kanani can't remove himself from it, or if the Eved Kanani can remove himself from it, he's like any other person that he should have removed it. If he didn't remove it, then the Adon is not responsible. Therefore, the Balei HaTosafot create a case by which the Eved Kanani is incapacitated in some way. And the question is, what is the Adon, the master's obligation vis-a-vis the Eved Kanani? Can he view him as property and treat him like property? Or does he have to treat him like another human being, and he's responsible to try to save his life and not just let the Eved Kanani die because he'll get compensated for the loss that he incurs? And according to the Balei HaTosafot that we're talking about, an Eved Kafut over here too, there's some that explain that the follow-up question about the shore is a similar question, which is, does the Adon here have responsibility because of the Tzar Bali Chaim of the animal to remove the coal from the animal? Or do we say that it's his mamon and then he can do as he pleases with it, and therefore he doesn't have an obligation to take off the coal if he just wants to get compensated for the loss that he is incurring? The Rosh gives a slight variation of the way that Tosfot sets up the question and says that the party who's placing the coal there, what can he anticipate from the Adon, or what can he anticipate in terms of the Adon's reaction? Will the Adon remove the coal because the Eved Kanani is chayav in mitzvot ki isha, and therefore he has a status like a bar mitzvot in some ways, and therefore if he puts the coal there, he can expect the Adon to take it off, and if the Adon doesn't take it off, he will not be culpable for the murder of the Zeved Kenani because he could have anticipated that the Adon would do it? Or do we say that the Adon doesn't look at his Zeved Kenani that way, he just looks at it as property, and therefore the person who placed the coal down cannot rely on the Adon to remove the coal because he just looks at it as a monetary issue or a monetary loss, and therefore he can't expect the Adon to take it off because the Adon will get compensated and he doesn't really care, or he's not going to make an effort to necessarily take the coal off the Eved. The Meiri is medayik in the Lashon of the Balei HaTosafot, that the case here is not when the Eved is going to die, because in that case it would be Kimlei D'Rabba Minei, and there would be no compensation over here, there would be no question about murder. And therefore he says, and you can see that in the last line of the Tosafot, there's a question of Dmei Nizko. It's talking about damage. Does he have to make compensation for the damage that is done? And we're talking about a case here where the Eved Kenani is going to be damaged, not in a case where the Eved Kenani is going to end up dying from the coal that is placed there. Okay, with that we end the second parak. Hadran Allah, Ketzad HaRegel. Now we're beginning the third parak. Aminiach Kad B'Rishut Rabim, Ba'acher V'Nitkal Ba. Person who places out a Kad in the Rishut Rabim, and someone comes and trips on it, V'Shavra, and is tripping on it, he breaks it, Patur. V'Muzak Ba. On the other hand, if he gets damaged by that there, Balachavit Chayav B'Nitzko. The individual who placed it down there is responsible for the Nezek. So it's clear from the Mishnah, is that the individual who put the Kad down in the Rishut Rabim was in the wrong. And therefore, if someone comes and trips and damages it, he's not going to be responsible for the damage that's done to the Kad because it didn't belong there. On the other hand, if an individual does trip on it and gets damaged by it, the person who placed the Kad there will be responsible for the damage that's done to the other party because he was in the wrong. Now the Gemara is going to, first of all, dissect the Lashon HaMishnah, something that I avoided in the Mishnah. It's explaining what a Kad and a Chavit are, because the Mishnah begins, HaMiniach et HaKad, Patach B'Kad, V'siyem B'Chavit. And then it says at the end of the Mishnah, Yimuzak Ba'Bala Chavit Chayav. It says that if he got damaged by it, then the person who owns the Chavit is responsible. Patach B'Kad, V'siyem B'Chavit, V'tana Nami. And now the Gemara is going to bring a slew of Mishnayot that have a similar genre to them, which is that they begin with one of these two items, and they change midway. Zeba b'chavito, v'zeba b'korato. Two people are walking along in the Rishut HaRabim. One is carrying his chavit, and one is carrying his korah, his beam. Nishbara kadosho ze b'korato shel ze. If the chavit breaks by smashing into the korah, patur. In that case, they are patur, because both of them have permission to be there, and since they're both permitted to be there, there's no responsibility on the bal ha-korah. Potok b'chavit, once again here, it says ze ba b'chavito. In the end, it says nishpara kadosho ze b'karatosho ze b'siyem b'kad, and switches over to kad. Mitzna nami. And again, we have another Mishnah that says ze ba b'chavito shel yain v'ze b'kadosho dvash. One guy is carrying along a chavit full of wine, the other one's carrying a kad full of dvash. Nistaka chavit shel dvash. All of a sudden, the utensil that's holding the honey gets a hole in it or a crack in it, and the honey is leaking out. So therefore the guy who had the wine in his utensil dumped the wine out, and he saved the honey into his chavit that was once holding the yayin. He only has the right to collect the compensation for the work that he did in capturing the dvash for the other party, but he does not have a right to ask him to pay for the wine that was spilled out. Even though later on the Masechta and Daf Pei Aleph, we're going to see that the Gemara says that there was a takana, that in that case, since the higher value is the dvash, that if the person spilled out his wine, that the bal ha-dvash would have to compensate him for the lost wine. That's only in a case where the bal ha-dvash, the owner of the honey, asked the bal ha-yayin to help him out and to spill it out. Over here, when he did it of his own volition, he would not be subject to that takana, and therefore the bal ha-dvash, since he didn't ask for him to spill out the wine, would not be responsible or obligated to pay for the wine. If he does want to pay for it, if he wants to be a nice guy and help him out, that's fine. On the other hand, since he did not ask for it explicitly, he does not have to make compensation for it. Again here, patach b'kad v'siyem b'chavit. Again here, we say that it starts with a kad, because it's a case where it's zeba b'kadosho dvash, and then it says nistaka chavit shel dvash, that the kad switched to a chavit now and got a puncture or a crack in it, and the dvash starts to spill out. So what's going on over here? Here we just brought examples, including our Mishnah, of three Mishnayot, in which you switch between Kad and Chavit. They're used almost interchangeably. So I'm Rapapa, Hainu Kad, Hainu Chavit. Rapapa says, Hainu Chanami, the words are synonymous. They can be used interchangeably. And the word Kad and the word Chavit are the same. But my Nafka Mino, Now, it's not a question on the Mishnah, now it's a question on the Gemara. Now that we've noted, or the Mishnayot are written that way, where they switch between Kad and Chavit, what's the nafkamina of whether you use Kad or whether you use Chavit? What's the meaning of that? It says, the Mekach Umemkar, for business transactions. Rashi says that Shbiyada Mocher Latet Loezu Shirtze, that the seller can give him what he pleases. If he said to him, I'm going to give you a Chavit, he can give him a kad. And as Rashi notes over here, chavit gedola min a kad, that a chavit is bigger than a kad, and herein lies the key difference between them, which is that a chavit and a kad, in a sense, are used interchangeably, but they're not really the same thing. Let's, for instance, say one of them is a larger pitcher, and one of them is a smaller pitcher. One of them is a larger barrel, one is a smaller barrel. So, if you call a kad or a chavit, they're both used to refer to the same object, but generally a chavit will refer to a bigger size of the object rather than the kad, which refers to a smaller size. But since they're used interchangeably, the person's not obligated to give you either one. He can give you the kad when he said chavit, or he can give you a chavit when he said kad. Now, hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? Ilema ba'atra dekada lo kari chavit, v'chavit lo kari kado. If it's in a place where the two items are kept completely distinct, the words are independent and refer to independent items, of course, harakari law. There's no question there that they don't use them interchangeably, and therefore, there's no reason for you to believe that you can give a kad when he said chavit, or a chavit when he said kad. It's a case where the majority of people call a kad a kad, and a chavit a chavit. But there is a minority of people who switch around the usage of the words or use them interchangeably. Maudatema, I would have thought zilbata ruba. I would think you'd have to go after the rule here, and therefore the assumption would be if one uses the terminology chavit or kad, they mean chavit and they mean kad. Kamash malan, de ein holchim b'mamon achar rov. From here we conclude that we don't go after the rov when it comes to mamon, and the individual, when we have a safek like this, can say that I meant the smaller item, or I meant the bigger item. And we do not say that the robe governs in this case. And therefore, a motzi mechavero alav araya, the one who is the claimant party over here, has to bring proof that he is deserving of whatever he said, or that this individual is not in the minority, and that he really is obligated to give him exactly what he said and not the other item. The Baalei HaTosafot asks a very basic question over here, which is, why can't you just tell by the price? If the truth is that a chavit is bigger and a kad is smaller, then it doesn't really matter what you call it, whether it's a chavit or a kad, the money or the cost should be able to determine what you bought. So the Baalei HaTosafot, the Rashba, and others answer over here that the cost differential is de minimis, and therefore it's never clear in the price as to whether you bought a chavit or a kad, because the cost of a kad could be at the same price as a chavit, depending where you are, what the materials were that were inside of it. And therefore, you can't determine just because of the kad or the usage of chavit, just by the price, whether the person meant a kad or a chavit, because the price differential was not great enough to be determinant in this case. Or it could be a case where it's impossible to tell through the price. For instance, if he says, give me 200 shekel worth of kadim, or 200 shekel worth of chaviot full of wine or shemen, in that case, it's very hard to know because the price was a fixed price. You're just filling in the number of items that would be inside of that price. And therefore, you'd be unable to do the price to determine whether it was a kad or a chavit. And Tosafot does note that even though there's a machlok between Rav and Shmuel about whether we are hochim achar a rov with regards to mamon, Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here, even according to Rav, who says we generally do go achar a rov with mamon, over here, this would be an exception to that case. Because in this case, the seller can say, I am amongst the minority. And since he's speaking about himself, he can make a definitive statement, and the other party has no response or retort to that. On the other hand, in the other cases where Rav and Shmuel argue, it's a case where the opposing party is making the claim that you were from those, or I thought you were, or I thought this is what you were doing. In that case, you might be able to say, Ochim achar rov by mamon, because there you can't make a definitive statement that you are from the minority. The other guy can say, no, I'm not from the minority. And then it might be subject to Olchim Achar Rov. But over here, where the party who's selling can make the definitive statement, there even Rav would agree that ain't Olchim Achar Rov b'mamon, because there's no way to prove that this individual is not from the minority, and therefore it's a Motzi Mechavero Alav HaRaya, and that will be the governing principle over here. Whoever has the money and whoever has the money and whoever's trying to extract will have the upper hand in this case. Now, Tosafot here asks a fundamental question that he asks here. He asks in the beginning of Sanhedrin, where we're talking about Beit Din. Over there, we know that when it comes to Dinin Nefashot, and when it comes to Dinin Mamonot, we apply Rove all the time. There, by a Beit Din that rules, in a case, we follow the majority. That's Olchim Achar Rov. That's true by Nefashot. And Achad Kam V'Kamar V'Kal V'Chomer by Mamon, we should be Olchim Achar Rov. So how is it possible that over here the Gemara says or concludes, Ein Olchim Achar Rov by Mamon, yet by Beit Din we use or we invoke Rove all the time? So Tosafot actually over there answers, and similarly over here, says that it's different than the case of Beit Din, because Yesh Lamar, the Hotam Gabi Dayanim, Shani Dechashiv Mi'ut Didhuk Mish Eino. Because in a case of a Beit Din where you have a majority rule, the view or the focus of the Torah is to say that whoever is the majority governs and makes it into a unanimous decision of the Beit Din. And therefore we're no longer dealing with a rove, but rather the rove becomes the decision of the entire body of the Beit Din. And therefore you're not saying there's a rove and a miut, and the rove overcomes the miut. No, we're saying now that there's only one opinion here, and that is the opinion of the rove, and the miut is ke'eno. That's one answer that Tosfot gives. In addition, Tosfot suggests to bolster this idea that by shar mamon, dika miut v'chazaka lo azinan bataruba. In other cases where the miut exists, like in a case here by rove and mamon, you have rove that says this, miut that says this, but in addition to that, you have the person who is holding the materials, and the other party is trying to remove it from him, hamotzi mechavreo alav haraya, because there's a chazaka for the person who's holding it or is in control that it should stay in that position unless you can prove otherwise. So what the Baalei Tosafot say is that generally by mamon, we have a miut plus the chazaka that the person is holding the actual object. That's what gives them the right to hold on to it, and why we don't follow the rove in those instances. On the other hand, when it comes to Beit Din, over there, first of all, you don't necessarily have a chazaka of who's holding it because they're adjudicating it in court. But number two is the miut doesn't exist. So even if there is a chazaka, the miut is gone as far as the Beit Din is concerned. And there's a unanimous decision based on the rove that's there. And therefore, the rove of Beit Din is very different than the rove of regular mamon. Now the Gemara moves from the technical aspects of the Mishnah to discuss the actual cases in the Mishnah. And it says, v'acher v'nitzkal ba b'shavra patur. Someone else comes and trips on it and breaks it. He is not responsible for the damage that's done when he falls on it. Am I patur? Why is he patur for falling on this item or destroying this item? He should look where he's going. The fact that he didn't look where he's going should make him responsible for the fact that he damaged it. So Amrei Debei Rav, Mishmei De Rav. So the Beit Midrash of Rav says in the name of Rav, Bimalei Rishut Rabim Kula Chaviot. It's an instance where this person put chaviot across the entire Rishut Rabim, so there's no way for this person to traverse the Rishut Rabim without damaging, without breaking one of the barrels to get through. The person created a situation or circumstance by which you could not pass without breaking one of these items, and therefore it's not a question of that he should have looked. He had no choice, and therefore he had to push his way through. Shmuel Amar Ba'felo Shanu. We're talking about a case where it was at night, and it was in the dark. And therefore, even if he was looking where he was, it's not easy for him to see these items in the darkness. And therefore, the person who left the object out there is the posheya. When he trips on it, can't say you should have looked where you're going. It was nighttime; he couldn't see it. Yochanan Amar Bekeren Zavit. It's a case where it's in the corner, as Rashi notes over here. Kishnach Nasimi Mavoi the Mavoi Minatzad. When you're going from one Mavoi to another Mavoi on the edge or the corner there, it's like Karenishigzir Zepanav Lorato. When the person turns to make the turn, or it looks up when he's making the turn, he didn't see it right there. It was in a place that was not obviously visible, or not something that he necessarily could say you should have been looking, because the way that he was looking at the nature of the turn made it that he wouldn't see the object that's there, and therefore he tripped over it. Now, Tosafot makes two comments over here which are extremely important. The first of which is, Amai Patur Ibaile Leune. The fact that, why is he Patur? He should have been looking where he's going. It's interesting that the Gemara only asked this question when the barrel got destroyed by the person who tripped. Maybe he should be chayav for the damage that he did. But if he was damaged by the barrel that was sitting there, the Gemara has no question as to the fact that the Bala B'chaviv here would be responsible for the damage done to the other party. So Tosfot says, why is there that difference? Why is they are a bifurcation of the din by which the Gemara says you'll be patur by the case when you did damage to the barrels, but rather when you got damaged by the barrels, there's no question that the Baal HaChavit be chayav, and tells what says the principle that we noted before, which is, there is a higher threshold of responsibility on a party to ensure that he doesn't do damage to others than he has to protect the objects from getting damaged. And therefore, in the case where another individual is damaged by the property, even though you could have said to him, you should have looked where you're going, that's not enough of a claim to exempt you from making payment or restitution in that case. The other hand, when the person does damage to your object, in that case, you have a lower threshold of shmirah or of care that must be taken, and therefore maybe if he had to look where he was going, he would be responsible for the damage that was caused. Tosafot then goes on to say, "V'lo shayef kan kol mishaneh bar chavishina bo patur." That this principle that we saw before, that when a person does something out of the ordinary, and then another person does something out of the ordinary, you're patur. So we hear where the person put the chavit in Rishut HaRabim, what he's not permitted to do. And then someone else tripped over it, where he should have been looking where he's going. So they both did something out of the ordinary, so maybe he should be patur. Tosafot says that claim is only a claim with regards to a behemah, with an animal. But with regards to a human being, even if another party did something out of the ordinary, then the human being is still responsible for their actions. If they did something that's mishuneh, they would be chayav. And we would still say here, you should have looked where you were going. And if you didn't look where you were going, you will be responsible for the action, even though the person shouldn't have left his barrel out there. The second important position that Tosafot takes, I mentioned this yesterday, that the Balei HaTosafot believe that when Shmuel says it was dark out, and therefore you are patur, that seems to indicate that a person is patur in the case of onus. In a case where they couldn't have controlled the circumstance, they are patur, despite the fact that the Mishnah said back on Chavav, Adam mu'ad bi'olam. And from here, the Balei HaTosafot conclude that in a case of onis gamur, in a case where the person is completely innocent or it's a complete accident, then they will not be chayav, despite the fact that we say Adam mu'ad bi'olam. Over here, the Balei HaTosafot give a criteria by which you determine whether something that's an accident is considered to be so much an accident that you're patur, versus a case of an accident where you'd be chayav, in a differentiation between Gneva and Aveda. That if something is stolen, if there was theft that was committed, and the person took the proper precautions, over there we consider it to be an onis, and therefore he would be patur the gamre, and any onis that is similar to that would be patur, even though Adam mu'ad bi'olam. On the other hand, if it's an onis by Aveda, where the person lost something, even though there again a shomer chinam would be patur, because he watched it properly, and it was an accident that it happened, nevertheless, that type of ones is not considered to be enough of ones that a person will be patur if he's an adam mu'ad bi'olam. And so therefore, Tosafot says, ones gamur, which is similar to gneva, that an adam is patur from. On the other hand, ones, which is not gamur, like something like a veda, where it's a little more close to shogeg, and therefore it has tinges of responsibility in it, or irresponsibility in it, in that case, the adam is mu'ad bi'olam, it would be chayav. And that's the Shita of the Balei HaTosafot, as we mentioned back on Chavav, that the Ramban disagrees with that and says that that's not the case, that even in Ones Gamor, a person is Chayav, unless there's another party that is a Posheya. And the other party being a Posheya, that's what brings the exemption here. So in our case as well, where it's at nighttime, the reason the person is Patur, according to the Balei HaTosafot, from the damage that he did is because he tripped at night, he couldn't see it, he's in Ones Gamor. On the other hand, for the Ramban, the reason the person's patur is because the other guy was the posheya for putting it out there at night, and therefore he's responsible for the damage that happened to his own barrel, and not the person who tripped over it. So now the Gemara continues. Our Mishnah is Mduyak, either like Shmuel or Rabbi Yochanan, not like the answer of Rav. The Ikarav, Mayaria Nitkal. Why in the case, if it's like Rav, does the Mishnah say that he tripped over it? Afilu Shavar Nami. He should be able to break it, meaning that if the barrels are laid across the whole Rishut HaRabim, and his only way to traverse it is to break the barrel, he has a right to do that. Then why does the Mishnah say Nitkal instead of Shavar? Amar of Zvid Mishmei Durova, Hu Adin Dafilu Shavar. You could be Medayik out of the Mishnah like Rav, or the Mishnah is not a problem for Rav's explanation, because the truth is, it didn't have to say Nitkal, it could have said Shavar. Behind the Tani Nitkal, so then why did it write he tripped instead of the fact that he broke it actively? I did by the Mitnei Seifa because of the latter half of the Mishnah. The latter half of the Mishnah says, Umchuzak ba, if it was damaged by it, Bala Chavit Chayav, then the person who put the barrel out in, or the pitcher out in the Rishut HaRabim is responsible for the damage done. Chayav Benisko is responsible for the damage that's done to the party that tripped over there. The Davka Nitkal, that's only true if the person tripped on the item that he left out in the Rishut HaRabim. Aval shavar, lo. But if he broke it actively, that's not the case. My time up. Who does it kanafshe? Because he hurt himself. If he intentionally breaks something that he doesn't have a right to do, meaning that the other person left it there irresponsibly, but he saw it and he intentionally tries to break it, and intentionally tries to break it, he hurts himself. That's his problem, that he hurt himself. He shouldn't have been breaking it. He shouldn't have been kicking it out of the way. And therefore, Tani Reisha Nitkal. So since in the Sefer it's only in a case of Nitkal, it wrote in the Kereisha also Nitkal, but that's Lav Dafka, because in the Reisha it could have even been a case of Shavar. So Amar Rav Ava the Ravashi, Hachi Amri B'Marova Mishmei De Rabbi Eli, or whether it's Marova Mishmei De Ula, that they say in Eretz Yisrael in the name of Ula, or they say in the name of Rabbi Eli, the Fi, Shein Darkan Shebnei Adam Lehitbonen Bidrachim. The real reason behind all of this is that people don't pay attention to where they are walking. So as opposed to the claim of the Gemara before, which is that the person should have been looking where they were going, and that's the claim against them, here in Eretz Yisrael they made a definitive statement, which is people just don't pay attention. Now, if that's a known fact that people don't pay attention where they're walking, then the party who puts something out in the Reshut Rabim is going to be responsible, because he has to know that people aren't going to be looking where they are going. And that will in of itself be an exemption for their having to pay when they do damage, when they trip over it and damage the barrel, as well as the fact that the other party will be a posheya when he leaves things there that people can trip over. Now the Baalei Tosafot ask over here, wait a minute, we know that by a shore, that we make a demand that the shore look where it's going, and if a shore falls into a boar, it's a problem for the shore because he should have been looking where he is going. So why is there a distinction here between a shore and an Adam? Tosafot answers, because the shore inav lamata, that a shore walks with its eyes facing down to the ground, and therefore he should pay more attention than Adam, whose eyes are in front of him and looking outwards and not downwards. But Tosafot says there is a distinction between animals and people, because animals naturally are looking down, whereas people are naturally looking forward, and that causes the difference by which we would say that people, we don't expect to see things that are happening, whereas animals, we do expect them to see what they are doing. Whereas there are others that suggest that people have imaginations, minds, and their minds wander, and therefore they can be easily distracted, and that for that reason, a person who is distracted won't notice or see things that are in front of him. On the other hand, animals who don't think in that manner, their whole view or perspective is what's in front of him. And since they aren't distracted in that manner, therefore they're responsible, or we would assume that they would see the obstacles that are coming up in front of them, as opposed to a person who may be oblivious to that which is coming up in front of them. The Ravid himself makes a distinction as to the level of the obstacle, meaning that when we're talking about an obstacle that's there permanently, or something that is of a permanent nature, well, then we have expectations that people would see it. On the other hand, if something's put there temporarily, or just laid out, and people don't normally expect it or know that it's there, over there we would make the person who puts the obstacle there responsible, because the person didn't expect it or shouldn't have anticipated that it would be there. So now, Hava Ubda bin Narda, there was an incident in Narda where somebody tripped over something that was in the Reshut Rabim, the Chiev Shmuel. And Shmuel obligated the party that tripped and did damage to the object in the Reshut Rabim. But Pumpadita, there was an incident like that in Pumpadita, the Chiev Robo, or there are other Sfarim that say Rabo. So Bishlama Shmuel Kishmate, Shmuel's Lishitato, that a person should look where they're going. If they don't look where they're going, they're going to be responsible. The only time you're patur is when it happens at night. So over here, he paskin like his own shita narda, that when the person tripped over and damaged it, that he's responsible. He should have been looking where he was going. Ela rova, or if it's rabba, lema kishmuel, svirle. Does that mean that rabba or rova here holds like shmuel? So Mar says, I'm a papa, karno da atzra havi. It was a corner by the olive press. They came into bishut ka'avde, by leilu une umezel. Since they had permission to put it there, then the person who was walking should have expected it or seen that it was coming. It's a case during the pressing season of the olives, and when the people are waiting in line to press their olives or bring their barrels or pitchers full of olives to the press, sometimes it's full and they're waiting for the people in front of them to leave. So they have permission, or it's a socially understood that people will then put their items down at the corner by the press. And if someone then comes and knocks them over, he should have been expecting that, because that's the normal way that people act. And since they acted in a normal manner, you will be responsible for the damage that you did there. But that doesn't mean that, in general, you would be chayav like Shmuel. Just this particular case, we put the responsibility on the person who tripped, because he could have expected it. Shlach le Rav Chisda Rav Nachman. Rav Chisda ascends to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, who is an expert dayan, and is part of the household of the Reish Galuta, Rav Chisda sends to him, Hari Amru, Lir Kuva, in a case where someone kicks their friend with their knee, Shalosh, they have to pay three slaim for the busha, the embarrassment that is caused by that. Libi'ita, if they kick with their foot, chamesh, then they pay 5 selah for the embarrassment cost. This is the shita Rashi. Olis no keret, shloshesrei. For a snokeret, you pay 13. Rashi says that snokeret is ukaf shel chamor. If you took the saddle of the donkey and you hit your friend with the saddle of the donkey, that is considered to be even more embarrassing to hit in such a manner. And therefore, one is chayav shloshes resalaim for that type of embarrassment. On the other hand, you can see here that the Rabbeinu Kananel says snokeret perish haka'ab be'egrof tachat lechayav. It's a hit with the fist under the cheeks of the individual, or basically punching the individual in their face. On the other hand, others suggest that it is a slap in the face, but with the back of the hand, slapping one's face, that's where you're chayav shlosh esrei for it. Now here Rashi claims that that is the amount you pay for the boshet. It's not clear whether when Rashi says you pay for the boshet, that means boshet inclusive all the other items, or it means that the boshet alone, and still you'd be penalized for the nezek tzar, ripui, and shevet, that was independent of any boshet that was done over here. Others suggest that the payment here is about the tzar that is caused, and then the same question would come up, is this just for the tzar, or is this for the tzar in the other damages and compensation included within that number for the tzar? And then the Rishonim also discuss whether these payments are considered fixed payments for everyone, or, as Rav Tosafot says over here, yesh mefarshim delani v'she'el kamar, this is the lowest threshold of embarrassment that can be caused. The Ri says the other way around. This is the highest payment of boshet, and you reduce it for anybody who wasn't of that highest stature, you reduce the number. So there, the machlok and rishonim as to whether this is a general guideline, or whether this is the maximum or the minimum price that you would pay for such boshet that is caused in these situations. The panda de maro, if it is for the handle of the hoe that he uses to hit his friend, or the kipina de mara, or if it's actually the metallic piece that connects to the hoe itself, or it seems the metallic part of the hoe, and a person uses that and hits their friend with that, my, what is the din? So this is the question that Rav Chista sent to Rav Nachman. Shalach lei chista, knasa kam gaved b'bavel? Rav Nachman says back to him, chista, what are you collecting knas for in Bavel? Now, even though, as the Balei Tosafot point out, that in cases of loss, we allow the judges in Bavel to intercede and to collect on behalf of parties, even though they don't have smicha, they don't have permission to dan dinei knasot, nevertheless, they're doing the shlichut of the batei dinim in Eretz Yisrael. But as the Balei Tosafot point out, that's only true when there's a chisaron kis, when there's a absolute loss here. But in cases where there's no monetary loss, we don't do that. Especially according to the way that Rashi is explaining over here, that we're talking about boshet. Over here, boshet is just compensation for that intangible embarrassment that's caused. As far as the nezek, the tzar, ripui, and shevet, those are monetary items that they would have to make restitution for and make payment for. For him to go and collect these special fines, what right did he have to act or to collect them in Bavel? And so that was Rav Nachman's question to Rav Chista. Why are you even asking the question? It's not relevant because you're not allowed to collect in these cases. So he says to him, Emily Gufudov Dahechi Havel, please explain to me what the incident was or what the case was so that I understand better why you're asking this question. Shalach Le Dao Garguta the Beitrei, there was this water well or cistern that was used by two parties. They were partners in it, using it to feed their fields. Tchoyom Ava Doli Chad Minayu. They alternated days by which each one of them could draw water from there. Atachad kagdali biyoma delo dile. One of them came in and started to draw water on a day that wasn't his. Amalei yoma didihu. The other partner says, it's my day. What are you doing there? Lo ashkach be. He didn't listen to him at all. Shakal pando demara. He went ahead and he took the handle of the hoe. And machyam. And then he hit him. So that's what Rav Chista's question stemmed from this case. What is the compensation in that type of case for hitting with the handle of the hoe? Amalei meya pande bapadna the michye. He could hit him 100 times with the handles of the hoe. I feel the manda amar lo avit inish dinin and afshay. Even according to the manda amar, it says that a person is not allowed to take the law into his own hands. Nevertheless, b'makom seida, in a case where there is loss that is going to be entailed and it cannot be recoverable necessarily, of an inish dinin and afshay, there people are allowed to take the law into their own hands. And here now the Gemara explains that machloket ditmar. Rabbi Yehuda says one may not take the law into his own hands. Rav Nachman Amar, Avid Inish Dinan and Afshe. Rav Nachman says, and so Rav Nachman is answering over here, you're allowed to take the law into your own hands. Heicha deika pseida, in a case where there is a law, Kuli Amalo Plige David Inish Dinan and Afshe. Everybody agrees there that you can take the law into your own hands. So that's Rav Nachman Shita, which he was saying before, that if the case here where there's a loss being incurred because he's drawing the water out of the cistern, which is not replaceable, it's not something that he can get compensation for, or if he doesn't stop the guy's continue to do it, and it's not something that Beit Din can change, he needs the water for his field afterwards, then in that case, he's allowed to intervene and to stop the loss from happening. Kiplige, the only machloka between Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda is Heicha Deleika Pseida, in a case where there is no immediate loss. Since there's no loss that's being incurred here, let him go to Beit Din and adjudicate the case in Beit Din, and Beit Din then will tell us what the answer is. Since he's doing the right thing, and he has a right to collect here because he's losing money, he doesn't want to have to bother to go to Beit Din and have to gather the dayanim and to have the whole case put out. He wants his money back so he can take the law into his own hands. Again, obviously, the concept is very appealing, but in practice is a very dangerous thing that if people can take the law into their own hands, and therefore you'll see in the Rishonim, they start to put up boundaries or specify the cases in which one can't take the law into their own hands. Meiti Rav Kana ben Bagbag Omer, Al tikanes techartzer chavercha litolet shelcha. You may not go into your friend's courtyard to take that which belongs to you. Shlo birshut shema tirel av kiganav, because maybe you'll look like a thief. You're going in there sneaking around to take out your stuff that he stole from you. Now the people are going to think that you're a thief. Ela shvorit shinav amarla sheli ani notel. Don't go in there like a thief and sneak in there. Go in there full force. Break his teeth. Head in there and take whatever belongs to you. That'll be a question of Rabbi Yehuda, because over here he's taking the law into his own hands. And Ben Bagbag seems to support that idea. And the Tosfot says over here that the case here is obviously a case where it is Lekup Seda. There's no loss here because it says, Mida'ashali Kanesh Lo Birishut. It says that you're not allowed to go in without permission. And as the Balei Tosfot say, that if it was that there was a Pseda, then you can go in even without permission. So what's Rav Yehuda going to say? Amalei imcha ben Bagbag? Meaning that you're bringing Ben Bagbag as a question to me? Yechidahu upligi Rabbanon alei. He is a single opinion, and the Rabbanon argue on his position. So therefore, I don't hold like Ben Bagbag because the Rabbanon disagree with his position. Or the other way Rashi explains it, imcha ben Bagbag, let Ben Bagbag support you. That doesn't mean anything because he's a dat yachid. Rabbi Yani Amar, my shvur et shinav, what does it mean to break his teeth? Bidin, that means to take him to court, to break his teeth. Doesn't mean literally, but figuratively, take him to court. Ihochi, if that's the case, the omar lo, it shouldn't be that you say to the counterparty, it should be the omrim lo, that the judges, mi ba'ilei, should have said it to him. Sheli ani notel, shouldn't be that you say that I'm taking what belongs to me. Shalohu notel mi ba'ilei, then the judges should have said he's taking what belongs to him. Therefore, the wording in the Braita ben Bagbag doesn't support this interpretation of Rabbi Yanai, that breaking his teeth means take him to din, because otherwise the wording should have been different. Kasha, that's a difficulty in Rabbi Yanai's explanation of this case. So, if you actually look in Shulchan Aruch, over there in the Shulchan Aruch brings down the Aloha here in two different places. In one place, in Choshen Mishpat, Siman Dalet Sif Aleph, he says, Yechol Adam Asu Din Latzmo, Imru Esh Shalom B'yad Acher, Shigazlo Yechol HaKachtom Yado. Someone sees a stolen object of his in another person's hands, he can go over and grab it away from him. If the other person tries to defend himself or stop him, he can hit him until he gives it up. Even if there's no loss involved. Even if he waits to take him to court, there's no additional loss incurred here, you still have a right to take the matters into your own hands and get the item away from the person who stole it from you. On the other hand, in Chosh Mishpat Siman Tav Kof Aleph Sivov, there the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Afilu Nichnas Chaviro L'Rishuto, Shelo B'Rishuto, if a person enters into your property without permission, V'Chaval Bo, and then the owner does damage to the person who entered into this area without permission, he trespassed, V'Otzio, and that's how he got rid of him, Chayav. There he is responsible for the damage he did to this party to have removed him from trespassing, then he Yishlo B'Rishuto Otzio. He has a right to remove him from his property, but he doesn't have a right to hurt him. And the question is, how do we reconcile between these? Or when do you have permission to injure the other party in seeking out justice, and where do you not have a right to do that? So the Netivot HaMishpat over there tries to give general principles as to where or when you have a right. The first distinction is a distinction in general between metaltalim and karka, is between items like karka, which don't disappear in general. There we would obligate you to wait and take it to din, because the losses that would be incurred are generally minimal. And on top of that, the land doesn't walk or go anywhere. On the other hand, by metaltalim, where, number one, they can't be damaged easily, and number two is the person can get rid of them or sell them and move them away very quickly, in that case, you will have much more or many more rights in terms of intervening. The second thing that Tivot Mishpat makes is if there is clear and present damage, which means that he's doing damage, and in all likelihood, the Beit Din may not intervene or may not actually get him to collect for that damage because it's done through Grama. Once again, there he would have a right to intervene or to do something in order to protect his property. Whereas in a case where it's not obvious or clear that damage would be done, or he would have the ability to collect it through Beit Din, again, we would not allow you to intervene or do damage to the individual. And in the case of trespassing, where there's no obvious or clear damage that's being done, and again, it's on the property itself, there you have no permission to intervene or hit the individual because you have a right to try to remove them, but you don't have a right to use force to get them out because the damage that they're causing is not barur, it's not clear. It's also Beit Din will intervene and put a restraining order on this individual and not allow him to enter once you go to Beit Din. And since there's no immediate loss and there's no immediate problem, there you can't intervene, or there you can't take the law into your own hands. And that might be even a case where it requires tircha yateira, even a case where it requires you to do more work to get the money back. We still prefer you do that rather than taking the din or the situation into your own hands. It's the Mishnah Lamelech, in commenting on the Rambam in this case, says that it's only a problem of hafra, a person disturbing you. Disturbances are not necessarily real monetary losses, and therefore you have to go to Beit Din in order to adjudicate it. You can't use force in order to push the person out of trespassing. Obviously, if there's a danger for the individual being there, or the person's engaging in theft and they won't leave, and then there's a hefsed barur, there you would have a right to hit them if that's the only means by which you can remove them from your property. So again, the general principle that we follow is that where the losses will be exacerbated, or the person will not be able to collect afterwards, there we might let you intervene or take the law into your own hands in order to protect your assets or stop the or stem the losses that are taking place. In cases where, even though it might require a little more extra work for you to get it, but your waiting to take them to din will not incur larger losses and will not result in you losing this object forever, or Beit Din not intervene on your behalf, in those cases we would suggest and we would obligate you to wait and not allow you to take the law into your own hands. Okay, we're going to stop here. 5 lines down on the top of Chavchet Amud Aleph.